It's time to get brutally honest.
I think you have to go back to Jay Peterman.
Come on.
I think you have to.
His name's not Jay.
For all intents and purposes, we've called him that. If you throw five picks with 14 attempts, you're Jay Peterman.
This is incoherent dribble.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. Don't ever accuse us of not preparing. The boys are putting their minds together, coming up with a toilet seat Tuesday.
With an extra plunger.
We might have to add a plunging option on top of the toilet bowl.
Maybe to keep an eye on. Like, for example, Montreal's been plunging lately, the Canadiens, so... Mm-hmm. Keep an eye on, see if they continue to earn that or maybe get themselves out of the toilet.
Maybe it's a successful plunge.
Yeah, you never know.
Because technically, if you're pulling the plunger out, you're hoping it's going to work and clear up a lot of issues for you.
Cleared up all the nonsense going on, yeah.
Montreal could use it, man.
They need a cleansing tonight in Dallas.
Is that where they're at in Dallas tonight?
It doesn't get easier because they've got Nashville tomorrow. So it's a back-to-backer.
Mm.
So if they drop both of those, it is going to be nasty time.
Yep.
I feel like people are prepared for that anyway. Like, I just get the impression like people in Montreal are expecting them to lose.
Yeah, it's, I mean, there's a lot of, the sense you get is, to me, a lot of people like the Marineros and that have given up type of thing. Kind of how, you know how this group was when the 18-wheeler had finally gone off the cliff and you're just like, all right, another, you know, witnessed another one.
You just accept it. You know what's happening. You know what's going to happen.
But there's two big games tonight. Edmonton's in St. Louis, which is not an easy... I mean, St. Louis is so good. And then Montreal's in Dallas. There's only three games tonight. There's two pretty big ones.
Yeah, those are the two most fascinating markets in the league for me. I mean, I've got a Canadian bias, clearly. I follow the Canadian teams closer. Mm-hmm. And I've got more of a connection to them, but... Montreal, because of the possibility for just a full-blown tire fire atmosphere all year, because of Bergevin and the controversial moves he's made, from the PK trade to the Drouin trade to the Therrien firing to the Price contract. I mean, he's made a lot of big moves. He's done a lot of different things over the years, and he's been there for a long time. And
yeah, I personally don't think the Price contract is a, like...
Well, it may not be controversial yet.
Goalie in the world, a max contract.
That was the going rate for him. It was an easiest.
Like, I think that's the easiest.
Easiest agent money ever to go in there with his stats and his pedigree and his awards and.
Yeah, like literally the guy won.
Okay, this is what I got. Give me Taze and Kane.
Blank check. That's the only one. I think it's just come full circle because he hasn't played well to start the season.
Well, it hasn't even kicked in.
Yeah.
It kicks in next year. I mean, listen, I'm with you in terms of Carey Price's ability, his resume. He had all the leverage in the world, but you're the one that gave him an unprecedented goaltender contract. No one's ever got that before in the cap era.
Right.
8 years at 10.5 for how old is Price? 30?
Yeah.
So you're going to have to live with that. I mean, in the moment, you know what you're getting. I think you know what you're getting.
Well, Roberto Luongo's 37. He's still putting up numbers. I don't think Carey Price will drop off. Like, he's... I mean, Roberto, I think Roberto's one of those... Is he a borderline Hall of Famer?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For me, he is, but I think I'm too close to that situation, so I try and...
No, I think he's right on the cusp.
He's got two gold medals. He's been a Vezina finalist. He's taken a team to the finals. I think he's close to 1,000 games played. I think he's at 980 or 979. Third in wins now, just past Cujo.
I think that's a Hall of Fame resume.
For me, it is.
World Junior.
How come Cujo's not in? Fourth in wins?
Yeah, I believe Cujo's fourth in wins.
How are you fourth in wins in the NHL in the history of the game and you're not in the Hall of Fame?
Well, Chris Osgood has over 400 wins, and we've discussed that situation, too.
But he was on a great team. Like, Cujo played on some teams that were not...
Some terrible teams.
Yeah.
He did. He played on some terrible teams.
Some really awful teams.
Cujo's, for me, a borderline Hall of Famer. I'm a big fan, so I think that I would give the benefit of the doubt, but I'm glad I'm not in that room, so I don't have to be. But for me, Roberto is, but I think for some other people, he's not. He won a gold medal while being a starter, and he won another gold medal by being the backup. But he's a decorated, like you said, world junior, longevity.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's just, his resume is missing one thing, and it's not going to happen in Florida.
No, they're not on the brink of winning a Stanley Cup in Florida.
Right now. Nope.
So I don't see that ever happening, quite frankly. If he ends his career there, it's not going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years unless something drastically changes.
Right.
Because they've been a disappointing team this year as well. And the Leafs are in Florida tomorrow, and they're obviously looking for a bounce back.
Yeah.
Because if you lose to the worst team in the league at home, anything short of that team's goaltender putting on an absolute clinic is a bad loss. I don't care what the underlying numbers say. I don't care about power plays, penalty kills. I don't care about refs taking goals away.
Yeah.
You can't put yourself in the position that the Leafs put themselves in last night, and it's on you. Mm-hmm. They didn't start on time, they didn't play well, they got exposed on the PK.
Yep.
And you lose to Arizona at home, you're going to have to face the...
Doesn't look good on you.
Yeah, you got to face the heat, and that's what happened. And they're back in action tomorrow night. Let's bring in Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on Overdrive, brought to you by Valiant Financial. Everyone's got a different take on that Matthews goal and Hyman and goaltending interference. What's your take on it?
I don't like it. I understand, I guess, why. I assume Ranta would have played that a little differently than spinning back into the net and having to dig himself out to, I assume he would have been up a little longer before he dropped into his butterfly for the shot. I just wish that the league would at least consider the international rule. I just think it would clean up the front of the net so much that you would have less plays like this where everybody's got a difference of opinion, but it's also a difference of how you, like, now are we taking into consideration what we think the goalie would do? Because then it's even more of a crapshoot.
Yeah, I brought that up in the 4 o'clock hour, Ray, because I saw you and Gord talking about it on Twitter. And, enlighten our listeners on the international rule of the crease and how that could curb. I mean, the league's talking about curbing slashing and the face-offs have been cleaned up a little bit. How could that rule curb the thought process of players when it comes to the crease?
Basically what happens is before there's a problem, the play's blown dead. So as soon as you go into the crease, when there's a play a play towards the net, when you get into the blue paint, they blow the whistle and the faceoff comes outside the zone. So rarely do you ever have a play that looks like, gee, I'm not sure if this should count or not. If the puck's in the crease, you can get 10 guys in there if you want. If you're driving the net and the puck comes across, and as you get there and the puck is there and it goes in the net, that counts too. But you can't get into the crease and then have the play continue. So when Hyman went in the crease and his stick makes contact with the goalie, but his feet are in the crease, they blow the play dead. So Matthews is coming around the back of the net and the play's dead. It doesn't even matter what could or might happen past that because the play's over. The faceoff comes outside the zone. But what really happens is in the tournament, we do the junior tournament and the world tournament. Within 3 or 4 games for each team, the players that aren't familiar with the rule just don't go in the blue paint. They stop right on top of it. It's really pretty interesting to watch because the first couple of games, guys are going through the blue paint. They don't even realize it. And boop, the whistle blows. I call it the trap door. They fall in the trap door and the faceoff comes outside the blue line. That's where you end up. And there's no gray area to it. The problem for rules become, in my opinion, when there's more gray area.
Well, Ray, that's the one issue I discussed. I was watching a game. I think it was in Anaheim. I can't remember which game, but somebody took the legs out from the goaltender, backed into him, and then the goal went in, and the ref was like, no, there's no goalie interference there. It's a good goal. So I'm thinking, okay. So I'm watching that one. I'm like, they're probably just going to allow that. It seems like it's different every night. They can't. But I don't know how you have any consistency because every case is different.
Every case is different. Now, Noodles would look at that from Ranta's perspective. And for me, I'm assuming he had enough time to, you know, to square himself up. But maybe you're so, you know, like, I'm assuming when Matthews went around the back of the net that Ranta would have still been on his feet. I mean, he doesn't play like Jonas Hiller. I mean, as soon as they finished the anthem, Hiller was down in the butterfly.
Right.
And he stayed there for an hour.
The move across, so the post-to-post play is a power slide, so you're down on it. And then once you get to that far post where Matthews came out on that glove side, he would have come across down and tried to seal that post in what's a move called a reverse VH. And then he would have tried to take some of Matthews' ice away by going out in the crease. So going out in his crease a little bit, let's say a foot or two.
Do you see him being interfered with that he can't get to his right position?
Yeah.
Or do you think he had enough time?
No, I don't, because I counted it, and it was 1.8 seconds after once he was in the crease, and he'd been, you know, the Hyman's stick was in his gut. So he was off balance trying to recover. He did a pretty good job of recovering, but it comes back, actually, Ray, and you make a good point, the interpretation of, okay, so how hard does he have to work to recover? Because if that's, for example, Mike Smith or Carey Price, they sell those plays that they just lay in the net. So maybe the ref, if the player decides, oh, I'm going to just sell this because it's in my gut and I'm off balance anyways, I'll just lay there, maybe the ref blows it down anyways. Like, maybe him trying to fight through that actually makes it tougher on the ref because he tried to recover but wasn't able to. And I mean, it was an amazing shot by Matthews, too. It was right under the bar. It was a terrific shot. But I just looked at it that he wasn't able to do exactly what he would like to do, and a goaltender should be afforded that. So that's why I thought it was no goal. But it becomes a, you know, that's why I was talking about international rules, because if it's cut and dry, then we're not discussing this today.
There would be no discussion. Because the play would have been blown dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I can think of countless games you watch where there's a guy in the crease and the puck doesn't go in, but you think as you're watching it, man, if that shot goes in, it's not going to count.
Right.
Well, it wouldn't count because the guy would be standing there with the puck and the whistle would blow.
Right.
And then he'd say to his teammates, stay the hell out of the crease.
Yep.
It's painted blue. You know, it's different. It's different than the rest of the ice. If you look down and you see blue, get out of there.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, I could see it happening at some point down the road. I mean, I feel like the NHL is reluctant to accept international ruling.
You know what worried me, though? This is a game in November. Like, let's be at 2-1, second round playoffs.
See, I think the bigger
go through this.
I think the bigger debate there is, in that particular circumstance, does the ref have the stones to call it back? Because I hate the review process. I mean, I risk sounding remarkably redundant every time I go on these rants, so I'm not going to do it every single day. I hate the review process. It's a perfect example last night. Stolen moment. What a great goal against his hometown
team. Well, we talked about the worst one ever, that national championship basketball game. The guy hit the game-winning three.
Right.
And they had to stop everything and review it.
But at least they counted that in the end.
I know.
I'm with you.
But how'd you like to be the ref? You're over there, you got that headphone on, you're talking to the league, they're discussing it, and the ref kind of thinks it's a goal, but they come to the determination through whatever democratic process they have that it's no goal, and he's got to go out and turn on his little microphone to say, by the way, it's no goal. They're not booing the league office. They're booing him.
Right. Well, and that's my point,
right? Like, it must suck.
And that's why I give him credit for last night. He didn't take into consideration the context and the circumstances that's Matthews. It's a tying game at the ACC, and I'll give him credit, but I do think human nature allows you to do that November 20th or whatever.
Right.
Game 7 Cup Final in their building. Let's see the stones you got at that point.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure you're going to, which again gets back to the lunacy of this whole process, because there's gray area all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like goaltender interference, and last night's a perfect example. There's too much gray area. So,
well, how about the puck over the glass? There is no gray area.
No.
The thing could be bouncing around like a tennis ball, and the guy just... Well, better yet, there's a pass in the defensive zone, and the guy deflects or bats it out of the air and it goes over the glass. It's no gray area. It's a penalty.
Yep.
There's some rules they have. I go to lift somebody's stick and I miss it and I clip him in the nose and he's got a bloody nose and I get 4 minutes. There's no gray area. Yet here, the most important place on the ice, there's more gray than anything.
That's where I think that this rule, like to me, the international rule makes more sense because guys can be conditioned to not go to certain areas on the ice. They can go hard there and they can battle, but then you're still going to find gray area because all of a sudden a D-man pushes you in.
Well, that can happen, and right? That can be open to interpretation. But I would think a large portion, a large percentage of the debate will be taken off the table.
Yeah.
You know, because, again, that's what you should be seeking, I believe, is
cut and dry.
As much cut and dry material as you can find if you're a sports league. And
you
last
know what's interesting about this? Oh, sorry, Brian. What's interesting about this for me is there is thousands of games of views for the league to look at. It's already happened. They've already, you know, it's not a rule that you go, gee, let's put it in and see how it works. Like the icing rule they tried in the American League for a year and a half before they went to it because they weren't sure because it was the hybrid. Well, this, they are sure. They've got thousands of repetitions of goals disallowed or allowed. You can look at any of them.
Right.
And you can sit out, and we can try and decide how that becomes applicable to our game here. It doesn't take away any loose puck battles around the front of the net. There's still wild scrambles all over the place. But what it does is it prevents the guy from getting into the crease, and you get into this debate, well, okay, he was in the blue paint, but the goalie had room to do what he's supposed to do. Well, it's okay one time, but not the next. So the answer is, in my opinion, is to take as much of the slop away as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't even have a debate over a goal that would have been, you wouldn't even have known it was going to go in the net because it would have been shut down beforehand.
Well, and it was really an opportunity for Matthews to get redemption because he didn't play well last night. He admitted to it post-game. And I think he was overdoing it, overthinking it. That's clearly an important game to him. It's against his hometown team.
Yeah, he was looking end-to-end every time he touched the puck, and it just wasn't happening.
That's exactly what he was doing. There were a couple times he got hit hard. He doesn't get hit hard very often because he gets rid of the puck on time.
Max Domi almost killed him on the wall there.
He got him. Yeah. And that's when you realized he wasn't in it.
He wasn't sharp.
He was not sharp
last night. And Max launches himself. Like he's
built like a brick, that kid.
He is, but he had a hit in Ottawa on Saturday that I did the game in. Like, he launches upwards, and I know people say, you know, you leave the ice, your feet leave the ice and that. He's a small guy, but a lot of hits, guys' feet naturally just come off the ice. But he comes with such a velocity and launches kind of upwards that it can be perceived as quite dangerous. And I remember that neutral zone play, and he kind of caught through a screen. Matthews kind of came around a body. And that could have been a real dangerous hit, like, because just for Matthews, not Domi, but just as far as him absorbing a massive collision.
But it was on him. He held the puck too long.
Yeah, you're right.
You're allowed to hit him.
All in all, it was a pretty crappy night.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't very good last night. And I got to take exception to when you said the worst team in the league. I watched Buffalo last night.
Yeah,
oh,
I did
my
too.
Goodness.
I watched that game.
How bad were they? In the shift where Evander Kane scores, I was watching Eichel, and I thought, man, for a great skater, does he ever stand in one place a lot?
He tries to use his reach and kind of vision and tries to slow the game down, but the game's very fast.
Man, like, get going.
Yeah.
Get the third goal against, he couldn't have broken less of a sweat on it.
I know, he got danced down low. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Like, I was like, oh my God. And whoever came in from to punch it in, I think it was Boone Jenner. He skated there like it was summer league. Like there was no resistance. That's the worst team in the league right now. We joked about when we do our power rankings. I even had to erase with the old ink eraser and move Arizona up to 30th.
Yeah.
Stick those guys at 31. Like that's bad.
It's something about that market, man. The Bills and the Sabres, every once in a while, they get a new coach, a new GM, and the same thing happens.
He's smiling again.
It's Finkel and Einhorn. Einhorn and Finkel. I mean, that's what it is, because you got Housley in there, you've got a new GM in there. And I remember thinking when, who's the new GM?
Botterill.
Botterill.
Jason Botterill, yeah.
Who comes over from Pittsburgh, a former player, former Sabre, walks in there. Obviously, a priority was to talk to Eichel and his reps and figure out what he's looking for, because they had the opportunity to sign him to an extension.
Gave it to him.
Gave him 8 years, $10.5 million, without ever seeing him play as a member of the organization. Now, clearly, he knew of him. He had seen him play from afar. But I'm talking in the clubhouse.
I would have said right away,
show me.
Go and play a year, and I'll pay you whatever you want, but you got to show me for a year.
Here's the only thing I will say, I don't know, but I think that comes from above.
It might.
I think that's an owner. That's Pegula, I believe. That.
Well, then there's one common denominator about the two teams that you just mentioned, the Bills and the Sabres.
It is.
He is the owner.
He owns both teams. Yeah, he owns both teams. And listen, Eichel, I absolutely believe, factored into Bylsma being out of there, Tim Murray being out. I mean, he's talked a lot of smack for a guy who has not really done anything other than being drafted second overall.
No kidding.
Well, he has 18 points, doesn't he?
They're not
17.
They're not even close to good.
Yeah, they're not.
No, they're garbage.
You know, and they've. You know, so they hire a first-time head coach in Phil Housley, and which surprised me a little bit, because when, I'll use another guy from Pittsburgh as an example, when Ray Shero took over in New Jersey, first thing he did was he brought Tom Fitzgerald with him, and then the coach they hired was from the Pittsburgh organization, somebody he knew really well in John Hines, and so there was some familiarity in a certainty about how things were going to run. And so now Phil's in there, and he's at the NHL level as a head guy for the first time. And like I said, or we said, it's a mess. It's a mess there.
There seem to be a lot of messes early in the NHL season. Like, I'm sure this happens every year, and maybe we're just paying more attention to it.
They're probably in markets that aren't as, I mean, two, Montreal and Edmonton, which we didn't expect. And then Buffalo, I personally thought that team was at least kind of turning a corner. I thought Eichel being healthy was, my question mark's always been the goalie, and he's as erratic as they come. Did you see the blocker shot goal last night? Like, he looked like, he acted like that shot was going wide in the net by 10 feet, and then was shocked that it went in.
Well, Florida, I mean, Florida's been a disaster.
Yep.
They're not much better.
The king of the mess this year, though, is Montreal.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, they're leading the reverse mess standings.
Yep.
Defense isn't very good. They're forward. They got three guys with five goals. That's it.
Should we hit the toilet bowl?
20 games into the year, man. Pardon?
Should we hit the toilet bowl?
As like a segue? Because we're talking about the Montreal Canadiens?
Well, do we at least tell Ray about what happened at the start of the show?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so you knew about the plunger situation yesterday?
Yes, which is when I tried to describe this to Cammie, and she wasn't having anything to do with it.
Well, when you get up off the phone, or you hang up off the phone, go to tsn.ca's like website. There's actually it's leading a story when it said O-Dog sniffed a plunger on Overdrive today. A fan sent in a plunger. And O thinks it's a brand new one, and to try it out, he sniffed it.
Oh, it is brand new. It smells like brand new leather or plastic.
Rubber. They don't make plungers out of leather.
A leather plunger.
It's in the Smithsonian somewhere. George Washington's plunger was leather.
Made of leather. Either way, we're going to add in the leather plunger as maybe a team that needs to plunge
their way out of a really sticky situation. Yeah. So,
well, then I would go with the Canadians for the plunger.
Why don't we make them the first annual plunger? Yes. Right? We'll use the plunger for the Habs because they need to get out of it.
Okay.
All right, let's hit the toilet bowl seat on a Tuesday afternoon.
Well, I guess I don't feel like laying a toilet seat on everybody.
Come on, flush, you bastard.
Toilet seat Tuesday.
I was just shaving.
I'll go with Jason Moss, coach of the Esks. Just a dumb call. Fireable offense. Awful.
Field goal down a touchdown. That's all you need to know. I'll take the field goal. Yeah, you're down a touchdown. Thank you.
So you still so that means another field goal. Oh, we don't have enough again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not good.
Fumbled recovery.
The worst part Calgary is people are saying the only thing we can think of is he didn't know the score of the game, which is really a fireable.
Doesn't
offense.
Have a Glenn Zuber.
Well, yeah. How about look at one end of the stadium? They got the big clocks hanging there, don't they, on each end?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Figure it out.
All right, got to zip through these.
I'm doing LeVar Ball. I can't stand the sight of that guy.
On CNN last night?
It's just I can't do it anymore.
Okay. LeVar Ball. Ray?
I'm going to go with Randy Carlyle and every coach that says, oh, we're going to name our starting goaltender tonight. Come to warm up. I'm tired of it. What a power trip. Don't be a jackass.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. Who the goalie is, nobody cares.
Yeah.
In the morning, the goalie's John Gibson. The goalie's Red O'Bara. Nobody cares. Nobody's changing the lineup.
Yeah,
it makes no difference whatsoever. Classic Randy. Good one, Randy.
Good one, Randy. Good one.
I'm gonna throw Chris Cuomo in there, the opposite side of the LeVar Ball interview last night.
Yeah, he got eaten alive.
And I'm gonna tease this. We'll get into it later this afternoon. Did you see Ray Allen
catfish?
Allegedly got catfish, which isn't. Yeah, it's not funny. But this guy's in trouble because he's been married to his wife for 10 years. He thought he was speaking with a very good-looking woman. Turns out it was some slob dude who was catfishing him, and
the
now he's in big trouble.
The old Manti Te'o trick.
Anyway, we'll leave it there. Good stuff, Ray. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5 p.m.
Talk to you then, boys. Later.
All right. Ray on Overdrive is brought to you by Valiant Financial. For fast approvals and competitive payment options on heavy equipment from any dealer, visit valiantfinancial.ca. Don Van Natta Jr. will join us. Jerry Jones versus Roger Goodell. The battle we've all been waiting for. Get you an update on that next. Listen to Overdrive every weekday for the Upper Deck Leafs lineup player of the day on Friday, coming with the names of all five players. And this week we're giving away a pair of lower bowl seats to see the Leafs take on the red-hot Calgary Flames. Johnny Gaudreau on fire again last night in Washington. That game December 6th down at the ACC, and the theme this week is former Leafs who Brian Burke acquired via trade. Today's Leaf lineup player of the day is J.S. Giguere.
Nice.
John Sebastian. The Upper Deck Leafs lineup is brought to you by Upper Deck Team Triples, available at ZypherEpic.com. That was a great Monday nighter last night. Atlanta right there in the playoff chase. Seattle. The Rams lost this week, so they didn't really lose ground in the NFC West, but Pete Carroll's taking some heat for challenging what was clearly a drop ball late in the fourth quarter. And that made them kind of force a longer field goal than maybe they would have wanted to take if they had another timeout and could have controlled the clock a little bit better. But the real story in the NFL this year has been about what's happening off the field of play.
Right.
You know, with the anthem protests and Donald Trump taking runs at different players and different owners and the commissioner. And
Jones involved. Like, yeah, it is.
Now it's all about Jerry Jones taking on Roger Goodell.
Makes Deflategate look like child's play.
Who wins that battle?
Well, I think we got a guy on the line who's probably got the best answer for that.
Yes.
Here is Don Van Natta Jr. of ESPN the magazine. He was a big part of that piece that came out last week that had everyone talking.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Jones, Roger Goodell, the history between these two, what's going on right now and where it's going to go. And he joins us here on Overdrive. How you doing, Don?
Doing great, Brian. How are you?
We're doing really well. So I guess we'll begin with the power struggle here. I mean, who has more power, in your opinion, in the NFL? Is it Jerry Jones or Roger Goodell?
Well, Roger Goodell has the most power probably of anybody in American sports. And that's something that really bothers Jerry Jones. You know, we've seen in the last few years with the Rams moving to L.A., the Raiders moving to Vegas, a lot of behind-the-scenes muscling by Jerry Jones of those two franchises, and he got his way in a lot of ways at these NFL meetings. But Jerry Jones feels as if the power has shifted far too much to Roger Goodell and away from the owners and especially him, and I think that's the basis for this battle that we're seeing playing out in the NFL right now.
And as much as I'm not a big fan of Jerry Jones, I can't understand where he might be disappointed. He is supposed to be employing Roger Goodell. Now, that doesn't mean he can do whatever he wants. He's in a community of 32. I mean, there's 32 different owners. But this does seem like a pretty drastic shift where, to your point, Don, it feels like Roger Goodell, the commissioner, the employee, is the one that can pull the strings. Meanwhile, the owners who are paying him maybe don't necessarily feel like they have the power they deserve at this point.
Yeah, and something really interesting has happened over the last few years. You know, we've had all these missteps by Roger Goodell on these disciplinary cases. It started with Ray Rice. It actually started with Bountygate with the Saints. If you remember, Paul Tagliabue, the former commissioner, the person who Roger Goodell took his place, had to come in and overturn those Goodell punishments against those Saints players for overreaching. Then we had the Ray Rice domestic violence case, that elevator video at that Atlantic City casino, horrible headlines all through the fall of 2014. And if you remember those awkward press conferences by Roger Goodell where he'd stand up and say, we're going to do better, it was as if he was learning on the job, a job that was paying him $30, $35, $40 million a year. Every time he would say that and do that, more people were being hired into the NFL league office on Park Avenue in New York City. And in a way, these screw-ups were allowing Goodell to consolidate his power because that office got bigger. There was literally a disciplinary wing of the NFL now with these two former prosecutors, Lisa Friel and Kia Roberts, that had been hired, who worked on the Ezekiel Elliott case. And so there was a shift, a power shift through the mistakes of Roger Goodell. He was consolidating power and actually making it impossible even for owners who might be inclined to replace him with this next contract, like Jerry Jones and Dan Snyder and some of the others, because there, despite the office getting bigger, there wasn't a very deep bench in that office. So it's been a really fascinating behind-the-scenes evolution of power, and I know for a fact Jerry Jones has complained to a number of owners in the NFL that he feels as an owner, despite him muscling those franchises, as I said earlier, he feels he's a suggester. He only gets to suggest things to Roger Goodell, who has the final word on all these things from player discipline to many other business issues in the NFL.
How many of those complaints were being heard before Ezekiel Elliott was suspended?
That's the great question. So the Ezekiel Elliott case is clearly the tipping point for Jerry Jones. I mean, a lot of this has to do with Roger Goodell's mammoth contract. He has paid a lot of money. That rubs a lot of owners the wrong way. Even owners who are generally supportive of his performance feel as if they're paying him too much money. This power shift, as I discussed, was bothering Jones, but it really came to a head in the way the Ezekiel Elliott case was handled by Roger Goodell and by the league office. You know, Jerry Jones thought back in May that Roger Goodell told him that Elliott was free and clear. That was the impression that Jerry Jones had from a conversation he had in May, about the middle of May, early May of this year with Roger Goodell. And interestingly, just a couple weeks after that, at a league meeting in Chicago, all 32 owners unanimously voted for Roger Goodell's contract to be extended. And one of the fascinating things about that, guys, that happened on that day is there wasn't 1 minute devoted among all those owners to Roger Goodell's job performance. They had never had a discussion about it. They just voted to extend the contract and gave this compensation committee the right to do that. And it turns out a few months later, when Goodell calls Jerry Jones just 2 days before the announcement of the Ezekiel Elliott six-game suspension to tell him that his star running back is going to be suspended, you know, as we reported in our piece at the top of our story on Friday, Jerry Jones goes nuts. He feels it's a betrayal by the commissioner, and Jerry Jones tells Roger Goodell, I'm going to come after you with everything I have. So the Ezekiel Elliott case is clearly a tipping point in the relationship between Jerry Jones and Roger Goodell.
We're chatting with Don Van Natta, Jr. of ESPN The Magazine on the ongoing feud between Jerry Jones and Roger Goodell and the soap opera that is the NFL right now.
We were talking the other day, what type of leverage does Goodell have? Like, he's asking for, it seems like, the world, because financially, I mean, $40+ million.
I don't know if he's going to.
Okay, let's 50
million,
say 50.
A private plane, allegedly.
But where's he going to get that any other place in the world? So, like, how does he have this type of leverage over the owners?
It's a great question. He has all the leverage, by the way, interestingly. Even though nobody else probably in the world would pay Roger Goodell that kind of money, when the owners in Chicago in May voted unanimously 32-0 to extend his contract. They gave him at that moment an immense amount of leverage. And, you know, they've already been paying him in the last 5 years. This is something that not a lot of people realize, $42 million. So that $50 million salary, or it was actually $49 million salary that he asked for in August, was a $7 million raise in a total compensation package for what he's been paid over the last 5 years. But here's the key part of the leverage, besides what they did in May. It's the fact that there really is no successor. You've had a number of owners grumbling about Goodell since 2014 and the handling of that Ray Rice disciplinary debacle to say, who are we going to get? Who is there? There's no bench at all on Park Avenue, despite all these high-paid, seven-figure salary people that have been brought in to fix all these mishaps and mistakes, many of them by Goodell. There's nobody there who's a natural successor. And then you look outside, and the worry among some of the owners is they don't have the institutional knowledge that Goodell has. I mean, Goodell's been a NFL lifer. He's worked for the NFL for 36 years. It's the only job he's ever had. And so, really, the leverage he has is there's nobody else. There's not a natural successor. Now, I wouldn't be surprised, guys, if what we see is he re-signs in the next month. You know, the meeting next month in Dallas is very important, interestingly, in Jerry Jones's backyard. And I wouldn't be surprised if next year, maybe the following year, you hear about a committee being set up among the owners for a search, which at that moment will make Roger Goodell kind of a lame duck. And they'll begin this long process to look outside for a successor to Goodell after his contract extension ends.
How much of the concern from the owners do you believe is that Goodell knows where the bodies are buried, and if he leaves, it could be open season in terms of him discussing publicly what happens behind the scenes with these owners in this league?
Well, that's a very cynical suspicion, but you know, not an entirely misplaced one. You know, there have been a lot of bodies buried. There have been a lot of scandals. There's been a lot of certainly a lot of stuff that we've been covering, you know, at ESPN and that the media has covered. Look, just the concussions issue alone and the cover-up and the denial that occurred all through the Goodell era, even predating Goodell when Tagliabue was the commissioner, is an area that Goodell has an encyclopedic knowledge of. So that's certainly an interesting question. But I think from the owners, to be fair to Goodell, for a moment on this point, I think the owners, particularly Arthur Blank and John Mara, Rooney, some of the other owners that are pro-Goodell and want this extension to be signed, they see him as somebody who's helped put a lot of money in their pockets. The annual revenue of the NFL in 2007 was $6 billion. It's now pushing $15 billion in just 10 years. That's pretty remarkable. Now, of course, the argument would be, well, how much did Roger Goodell really have to do with that? But the CBA in 2011 with the players, the collective bargaining agreement, is something that the owners really love, and I think they felt they got the upper hand on the players, and I think by all metrics they did. And right now we're coming into a very important 3 or 4 years for the NFL. The CBA expires in 2021. That has to be negotiated, a new deal with the players, and also the broadcast deals. The very lucrative broadcast deals are coming up at a time when ratings are down and, you know, the streaming option is one that's on the table. So, again, I think it's trust the devil we know more than the devil we don't know.
Well, this is not the first public or private battle Goodell has had recently with a prominent owner. We know what happened with Robert Kraft and the Pats and Deflategate, and it probably didn't hurt that they ended up going to a Super Bowl and winning a Super Bowl to kind of bring those two sides back together, at least Kraft and Goodell embracing each other once again. I'm curious, Don, I mean, is that even possible, considering what has come out from your piece and other pieces that continue to trickle out between Jones and Goodell, to get the cat back into the bag? I mean, can you picture a scenario where Goodell and Jones are back on solid ground?
I don't know if I can. And you know what? I'm not so sure that Kraft is entirely back on solid ground with Roger Goodell, despite, you know, what we saw after that Patriots comeback against the Falcons in the Super Bowl. You know, Kraft has a very complicated relationship with Goodell. I know that Jonathan Kraft, his son, feels that the NFL league office is bloated. But to your question about Jerry Jones, this feels more, even more personal than Kraft took the Deflategate. this, you know, the way Jerry Jones views this, he feels as if Ezekiel Elliott was done wrong by the league office, by this investigation that he feels is deeply flawed. And he also feels that Roger Goodell betrayed his trust, basically lied to him. You know, Jones came away with a distinct impression last May that Ezekiel Elliott was off the hook. And if you look carefully at what Jerry Jones said publicly through the summer, you know, when training camp opened in Oxnard, California, Jerry Jones told the press, Ezekiel Elliott's going to be clear. There's nothing to this domestic violence stuff. I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to be on the field every game this season. He said, Jones said the same thing in Canton, Ohio, when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. And just a few days after that, he had to eat crow publicly. And I think he also told members of his family and people inside the Cowboys organization that there was nothing to worry about. So this is egg on his face in a very public way, and I'm not so sure Jerry Jones is going to walk away from that as easily as Kraft might have.
It's an amazing story. You can find it, ESPN the magazine. He is Don Van Natta Jr. Keep up the great work. Really appreciate the time and the takes, and we'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Don.
Appreciate it, fellas. Have a good one.
There he is, Don Van Natta Jr. on Goodell v. Jones.
Noodles sneaks in there with a great question, NFL style.
Very great question. And we should point out,
well,
I mean,
because isn't that what we were talking about? Like, how the hell does this guy have so much leverage for 50 sheets a year?
I think everyone wonders the same thing. You go down the rap sheet, how many things he has fumbled and bungled and screwed up from a PR standpoint. And I understand they make money and they're in it to make money. But Ray Rice, and now potentially Ezekiel Elliott, 15, and there's been countless ones.
$15 billion.
It's a lot of money that they're pulling in.
But you know what? You're right. Like, this guy knows where bodies are buried.
It's a cynical view. He's right. But that, I would think of that if I'm an owner and I'm like, I had some shady things going on that didn't get public that all Raj is aware of.
Exactly.
And if he writes a book because we decide to kick him out of the league, I could be in trouble.
Exactly.
But we appreciate Don Van Natta Jr. joining us, an esteemed journalist. And we conducted that whole interview with the plunger sitting on the desk.
I know.
So if you're streaming online, bit of an oxymoron.
Respect the plunge.
Respect the plunge. Gareth Wheeler coming up. TFC Columbus tonight in Columbus. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. Watch it on TSN. And Bobby Mack on all the rumors throughout the NHL. Every great player in the league will be a Maple Leaf at some point this season. We'll get Bobby Mack to confirm that at 6:20. All right, so I think we're all well aware of this by now. We're inviting everyone to TSN 1050's party at the Pine on December 10th when 97 takes on 34. Bring out your friends and meet everyone from TSN 1050 and catch what should be a great game. We're also looking for 38 VIPs who have a shot at leaving the Pine with hockey tickets or a trip for two to Vegas for Toronto's New Year's Eve matchup against the Golden Knights. So you can win VIP tickets on Leafs Lunch and on Overdrive every weekday before the big party again. That's December 10th down at the Pine. So we know the way this works. I'm going to hit the roulette table. We'll find out which number you're looking for. And if you are that number when we open up the phones, you're getting a VIP ticket. So, Malls, hit the cheesy music.
Oh, yeah.
Red 9. Caller red number 9 at 416-870-1050. 416-870-1050. Caller number 9 picks up a VIP ticket. Leafs Oilers, December 10th, down at the Pine. Come hang out with everyone from TSN Radio and chance to win tickets and a trip for two to Vegas.
Should be a good game.
I wouldn't mind that trip to Vegas.
I think we should be going
to Vegas.
I agree with you. But you guys are working.
I think we're working World Juniors.
Yeah, you guys are both doing the World Juniors.
Maybe we can zip in for one night.
Okay. We'll talk about it. See what happens. Maybe we'll win those tickets down at the Pine.
Exactly.
Bobby Mack and Gareth Wheeler on the TFC match tonight. Final hour up next. TSN 1050.